Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Give a countdown.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said.
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Better believe it, baby. Yes, we are. And I'm in one of those, we're here, and I'm in one of those I don't give a rat's ass mood today. I don't know why. I have no explanation for it. You ever get in one of those moods that you just say, screw it, I don't care? Well, I hate to be that way on a Wednesday. I guess that's it. It's hump day, and I just kind of feel like, no, that's not what I meant, but I meant the middle of the week. And so we plan on having a good time on the program today. Going to have a good guest coming up for you in the second hour. Gentleman going to talk to us about the oil giants dragging in their feet to recover over a billion barrels of oil right here in America. That should be interesting. I don't know whether I agree or disagree with him. We'll find out. First time we've had somebody like that on the show talking about some of the latest processes on getting recovering more oil and all that. Let's see. I didn't even make myself any notes today. How many of you saw? And if I sound like I'm got a mouthful of marbles today, I probably do. I've got a cough drop going here. I've got this allergy thing going on. And I thought it was just me. I called the doctor's office this morning to make an appointment, and they said, oh, my God, yes, the allergies are going wild down here right now. So I had to wait till I'm my age to finally get an allergy. Damn. Anyway, I digress. How many of you saw Tweety Bird show last night when he had Hackett and this Van Taylor on with him? Did you see that? That was the worst assassination of a radio or a TV guest I have ever seen. I thought Matthews cut the guy up into little pieces. He was brutal. Just brutal. And the guy had it coming, this Van Taylor. He's running for the congressional seat that encompasses Crawford, Texas, as I understand it. So, Yahoo, that ought to be quite a... I'd like to see the polls at that joint. And anyway, he looked like a complete stooge. All he could say was, Al-Qaeda's doing this and Al-Qaeda's doing that. And Chris was saying, you know, well, did Al-Qaeda attack us on 9/11? No. And, you know, he just kept going back to the party line and to his talking points. He couldn't get off his talking points. He didn't have brains enough to do it. And Paul Hackett just ate him alive. God, it was awful. I even felt half sorry. Well, not really. But and of course, the JonBenet story is all over there. They got that kook guy bringing him back to Colorado. Maybe he's there now. I'm not sure. Don't know. I did read this thing about him needing more soldiers. The Marines are going to have to recall 2,500 people back to the service involuntarily, and I would, doesn't that strike you as odd? 39% of the folks in the country still approve of the war. So let me see, 39-40% of it, that's about 12 million, something like 12 million, okay? And 12 million folks, there's got to be a lot of military-age people within that 12 million, wouldn't you think? And in that 12 million, there's got to be a lot of right-wingers, wouldn't you guess? And, of course, they're all gung-ho on the war and all, so how the hell can we be short on soldiers over there for the Marines right now? I don't get it. And, God, somebody sent me this a disgusting email and story today. And disgusting. But I'm going to talk about it anyway. Talking about frat boy Junior Bush having farting contest in the Oval Office. Now, guys, are you with me on this? You know, they said these awful things about Clinton, about how he defiled the Oval Office with some of his actions that, you know what I'm talking about. Some of the actions that were happening in there between he and Monica Lewinsky. But they went on and on and on and on about it. Well, what about a president walking around telling fart jokes and actually doing the actual farting himself in the White House and thinking it's funny? You know, I don't know. Wouldn't you like to think that you're president? I mean, you know, your drunken buddy down the street, okay. Your lifelong pal from junior high, yeah, all right, you've done those sorts of things. But wouldn't you like to believe that your president of the United States is sitting in the Oval Office not doing fart jokes? And, I mean, wouldn't you? I don't know. I think that's more disgusting. I think that's worse for the Oval Office than what Clinton did myself. If you want the truth of it. Anyway, it keeps getting weirder and weirder and weirder. We are not going to talk primarily today about this ALEC story that I teased you with yesterday. The American, why can I never remember that? American Legislative Council. I forget what the E stands for. It's a hardcore right-wing organization. And so-called good Democrat running for a high office here in Florida is a member of the organization and yet denies it. And we've just about got everything together on the story. And so we're going to do it tomorrow, one way or another. We've got a campaign asking us not to do it, but you know I'm going to do it. You know that. What else do we have on the list of things today here? It's going to be a helter-skelter day, I can tell you that right now. And if you hear the old cough button silence now and then, you'll know that yours truly is having some of that allergy trouble and has to take a little cough here and there. So do forgive me if that does happen today. Anyway, I just was looking at a note here. I saw something that came in this morning that I haven't seen for a good long time now. And I wonder if any of you, I wonder if it's something that's just dropped or what. I got a note from the Draft Feingold people. And there's been nothing that I've seen for a long, long time. You know, there was a big push for that back when Feingold came out with his talk about ending the war and so forth. And there hasn't been much about it since. In fact, we even had a guy come and speak to our local Democratic Club meeting about it, a representative of the Draft Feingold group. And I wonder how that's going. If any of you know, if any of you are a member of that organization, let me know. Draft Feingold. And I wonder also, when we went to the Washington for that Take Back America conference, we had a good long conversation with the Draft Al Gore folks, and I wonder how that's coming along as well. Here we are, a year away, a year out from Katrina, and as you can see on many of the shows that are on about it, that the truth is finally coming out, and and it appears that Halliburton got the cash and the poor people got the trash. That's just about the way it looks to me. You've all heard the story, I'm sure, of what was it, the Carnival Cruise Line that made it sound like, oh, gee, we've donated to the ship and we've done our good, well, when in fact they had Jeb Bush lobbying to Washington for them within hours after the Katrina to get a ship down there and charged an outrageous amount of money for it. And all sorts of rip-off schemes going on in that particular area down there. You know, the thieves and crooks and the Halliburtons and the Bechtels and the KBRs and those folks, they salivate when they hear something like a Katrina has happened. You can see them sitting in their office with their feet up on the desk and their big black cigars saying, oh my God, this is a good one, when something like Katrina is happening. So always money to be made by some scoundrels. Always. And I also came across an interesting story today that you can believe this or not. I don't. Perhaps I believe it in a certain way. I see that George Bush has entered a book reading competition with Karl Rove, his political advisor. White House aides say the president, now sit down when I say this. They say the president has read 60 books so far this year. See, we're in August, 32 weeks or so. forgive me if I don't believe that. 60 books this year. I wouldn't even believe that he read 60 comic books with Archie and Jugs and all those people. I wouldn't believe it. Absolutely, there's no way. And particularly, I heard someone talking the other day that among the books he's reading is one by Albert Camus. Now, if Bush is reading Camus and actually digesting it, then I'll eat my hat. I do have a hat around here somewhere. I'd have to look for it, but who are they trying to kid? 60 books for Junior Bush, when we all know that he's had a great disdain for books. He is as much said it, that he's not much of a reader. He has somebody else read the newspapers for him, even. What else on the list? And by the way, you can give us a call, you know, and I hope you do, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254, and somebody writes on the chat room, and Bush is reading books, that's going to hurt his polls among his base if it gets out. Well, it'll certainly surprise some people, that's a fact. Most certainly were. And our friends from Michigan sent us a story down. You know, all know about Dick DeVos up there, the Amway heir. And I guess he's head of Amway now. He was leading Jennifer Granholm in the governor's race up there. But she has recaptured the lead right now. And the story went on to say he said, don't feel too sorry for him if he loses. He won't get to stay in the governor's residence on Mackinac Island. The only reason I could see why anybody would want the job of governor of Michigan, I agree. But he can return to his home above, and it shows his home, his fabulous home, monstrous home, 8 bathrooms, 7 fireplaces, 4-car garage, billiard room, indoor swimming pool, 5 bedrooms, the whole monstrous, big monster home. He's also got a home away from home in Holland. But one of his people that used to work for him said, perhaps you too can become an Amway distributor and get to live like this, or perhaps not. Amway and its clones are ravaging huge numbers of people every year with this story that they have this special system for earning income. He said the company had to go global to survive because it had worn out its welcome in the U.S. The actual result is, coming from a guy named Fitzpatrick, says 99% of all who sign up and pay the money to distribute products don't make a profit, and 80% of its products are bought by the company salespeople and never resold. Former high-level Amway distributor Eric Scheibler, who now lives in Pennsylvania, has written extensively online and in a book about what he saw as fraud and deception in Amway's overseas and domestic operation, and he's produced copies of letters he sent to Dick DeVos describing the alleged fraud that he says were never answered. He said there's a systematic fraud. Amway has been promoted as having no downside and potential generating a six-figure income, but it has almost a 100% loss rate for recruits. So Dick DeVos against Jennifer Granholm. She's done a yeoman's job running Michigan in the hardest of times, and I certainly hope that she'll get reelected. I most certainly do. 866-546-5254. We hope you will give us a call. Love to hear from you. And right now we're going to hear from one of our favorite guys.
Ladies and gentlemen, Rush Limbaugh.
They say that I'm sleaze and elitist. You please, everybody disagrees with my rap. I'm horrendous, I'm appalling. My ratings now are falling because I'm so full of crap. With condescending cries, making money, selling lies. You might say, everybody hates my guts. I'm offensive, I'm a bigot, I'm a fraud. Can you dig it? I'm a sexist, racist, homophobic, fat, pathetic, cuts.
I'm a Nazi.
That's right.
I really am, because I'm a Nazi.
That's right.
You're being scammed.
I'm a Nazi.
I don't care about the middle class, because I'm a fat conservative butthead with a face of a horse's ass.
He's a fat conservative butthead with a face of a horse's ass.
I have a subhuman figure, a huge rear end. My brain? That's another story.
It's quite another story.
I have a face the size of a washtub, and my ass is as big as Missouri.
Yes!
This bastard is sick. He's a fat bomb as big and his ass is as big as Missouri.
Yes, Terry Bob! Manipulating statements exaggerate the truth. I can't believe they hate my show. Inspires. It's not just because I'm stupid. It's not just because I'm scum. It's just because Republicans are liars. I am heartless. I am vain, insensitive, insane. They say that I'm a national disgrace. I am nasty, insulting, basically revolting. I'm a concentrated pile of human waste. Because I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
Hi. I really am, because I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
That's right. You're being scammed.
I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
I don't care about the middle classes. I'm a sick Republican sleazeball with the face of a horse's ass.
He's a sick Republican sleazeball with the face of a horse's ass.
They say that this is not about my vanity. They doubt my sanity. They think I'm nuts.
So nuts.
I am a cyst on the ass of humanity.
Yeah.
New Republican slogan. Read my guts. From the bowels of Eve, comes the voice of Rush Limbaugh. In closing, let me say that each and every day, I'm an evil, rotten, egotistical snob.
Evil, rotten.
I'm the copper, the cop of Joe McCarthy-like Gestapo, the right-wing, foam-of-the-mouth, jack-booted slob, the democratic trashing, years of liberal bashing with the equivalent compassion of a grommet. With the IQ of a fig, I'm a fat, obnoxious pig. And the truth of the matter is, I'm vomit. Because I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
I really am, because I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
You're being scammed.
I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
I don't care about the middle class, because I'm a fear-mongering scumbag with the face of a horse's ass.
He's a fat conservative butthead.
Hey, sick Republican sleazeball. Fear-mongering scumbag.
Oh.
Egotistical ass bite.
Mean-spirited,
hog-wallering fat conservative puss.
With the face of a horse's ass.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile on that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Well, contrary, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at headonradionetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
This is an impressive crowd, the haves and the have-mores. Some people call you the elite. I call you my base.
Oh, it's true.
Call Guy James now. 1-866-546-5254.
Hey, glad to have you back. Glad to have everybody back. Hope you give us a call here this afternoon, 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Love to have you. You know, I'm talking about Junior Bush, reading books and so forth. You all heard that he was writing a book, didn't you? You did hear that. My sources tell me that he's got the pages all numbered. All he has to do now is, fill them in. But at least he's got started on it. I was at a big gathering week before last. I don't know. It was a big fundraiser we had here for Robert Neal, Democratic candidate for Congress against Cornelius McGillicuddy, better known as Connie Mack. And I told this little story, and so I thought I'd tell it to you, and maybe some of you have heard it, but the crowd loved it, so at least they said they did. Maybe they were just being kind. But George Bush was going to attend church on Sunday morning at that big Episcopal church there on the north side in Washington, D.C. And, of course, you know, he would arrive with his entourage and the whole deal and make a big deal out of it. And his poll numbers have been down, and people have been generally down on him and so forth. And so his advance man went to the church and talked to the bishop, who was going to give the sermon that Sunday, and told the bishop, we will give you $10,000 to do what you will with your church for your church if during your sermon you will say that George Bush is a saint. You know, his poll numbers are down and all that, and coming from you, it would be a wonderful thing, and we'll give you the $10,000 for your church to use in any way that you like, if you will just say in your sermon that George Bush is a saint. Well, the bishop, not being a big fan of George Bush, had to sit down and think about this for a while, and he thought, and he finally looked at the representative from the White House and said, okay, I will do it. I will say George Bush is a saint during my sermon on Sunday. So the bishop got up, and they had all the preliminaries, and in comes Bush with his entire entourage, him and, Laura, and they sit down and right down front and make a big spectacle themselves, and the bishop starts his sermon. So we have the President of the United States here today, one George W. Bush, who may well be the worst president in the history of our country. He has done everything he can possibly do to ruin the environment. He has ruined our reputation around the entire world. He's gotten us involved in a horrible war in Iraq. We've lost 2,600 of our finest, 20,000 casualties, killed God only knows how many innocent Iraqis. He's talking about how he wants to bomb Iran and North Korea. And our reputation in the entire world is gone. But compared to Tom DeLay and Dick Cheney and Condoleezza Rice, George Bush is a saint. Now, if I had a drum, I'd have give a put-um-bump on that one. Hey, give us a call, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. At Bush's press conference the other day, I'll talk about something a little more serious. Bush said the strategy is to help the Iraqi people achieve the objectives and dreams, which is a democratic society. That's the strategy. The tactics, now, either you say, yes, it's important, we stay there and get it done, or we leave. We're not leaving so long as I'm president. That would be a huge mistake. It would send an unbelievably, you know, terrible signal to reformers across the region. It would say we've abandoned our desire to change the conditions that create terror. So, what is he saying here? To me, it sounds like he's saying, definitely he's saying, he's going to leave this mess for somebody else to clear up. In the meantime, lots more people are going to die, including American soldiers, and many more would-be terrorists will learn their craft in Iraq, ready to be applied elsewhere later on. We'll be spawning thousands of new terrorists. And what are the reformers across the region, that would get a terrible signal if the U.S. left Iraq? But those reformers seem to consist almost totally of Islamists. In Iraq, the reforms, as he put it, are well on their way toward creating a theocracy. And the same is likely true of any other currently dictatorial Middle Eastern country. And if you remove the dictator, you create a vacuum. And politics, as you know, abhors vacuums. So in go whatever group already exists that desire raw power. And in those countries, it isn't the secular middle class, you know. And I have this question for all of the right-wingers who always pose the question, you know, when they can't say anything else about Iraq. They always come back to, well, you're glad Saddam's gone, aren't you? That's really a good thing that Saddam's gone. Why, he was murdering people in that country. Yeah. He murdered some people in that country. He murdered a lot of people in that country. But as far as I know, there's about 100 dying every day now. Heads cut off, brutalized, drilled in the head with electric drills. Every horror known to man people are being tortured with. Was it that bad under Saddam in the last few years of his regime? Frankly, I don't know how you tell the difference. I really don't. And so I'd be curious to know what Bush means by changing the conditions that create terror. It looks like having a free market available to be picked clean by the Halliburtons and the Enron vultures is really an essential part of the fight, the way I see it. And after all that, I agree it wouldn't be a good idea for American troops to leave Iraq first thing tomorrow morning. But I thought the idea was not to give any timeline which would encourage terrorists. Now Bush has given a timeline, or at least an estimate of the earliest date at which something might happen. And shouldn't this encourage the terrorists too? Not while I'm president? Of course, almost everything Bush has done has worked out exactly like bin Laden might have planned it, had he been the super criminal that the Bushes have painted him out to be instead of the nomadic thug that he really is. I can't think of right now what the psychological term for someone who refuses to change or adjust even when the facts show that it's absolutely necessary, but whatever it is, that's what we've got in the White House right now. And I would have them pack up tomorrow morning. I don't care. I would. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Hello? Well, we hit the old button and nobody home. You'll have to call back, I guess. All righty. Yeah, give it a call, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. So, here we go. See if our phone bank is working right here today. All sorts of little blinky things going on there. Here we go. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Hello?
Hello, Guy. Bill from Toledo.
Hi, Bill.
How you doing today?
Good.
Hey, didn't anybody think this thing through?
What?
On this going to war?
Doesn't look like it.
I mean, all this money we've sunk down this rat hole, and what has the American people been able to say? Oh, but we're no safer from it.
Certainly
and
not.
Now they're calling up these Marines. I imagine a lot of them knew that they had a good chance of getting called back because of the way things were going and that. But it's just unbelievable. I mean, a lot of these congressmen and senators on both sides have to just think, there wasn't no lessons. Nobody, I mean, Vietnam isn't that far away. I mean, that, you know, that Vietnam happened, and they could see how that turned out.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I thought we'd never, I'm shocked in one way, in another way, since this Bush and company, I'm not, but I'm shocked that this country has allowed ourselves to get into another cesspool like Vietnam was. I just can't believe it. It'd be different if it had happened 80 or 100 years ago, but it's still fresh in the mind of many people.
Oh, that's what I mean. I mean, hell, I'm still a young man, and that was during my time.
Sure.
And, you know, you just you look at how that went and how we left there. Nobody remembers the scenes of the helicopters taking off from the embassy and that. And I just can't believe how this is all going.
Yeah, you know, on the one hand, that was a sorrowful sight to look at, the way we left, tail between our legs and running out of there. On the other hand, it was a wonderful sight to know that maybe we finally were getting cut off from that whole damn horrible mess. It was an awful mess, and I just can't believe that the people of this country, there's enough people, like you said, you and I, we're old enough to know, and we've allowed it to happen again, and it's just hard to fathom that we've,
just,
you know.
I just can't believe that vote. You know, I watched that probably a couple times, you know, on the TV live, and then on the computer at night and that, and when they'd show it over, and just couldn't believe how quick that vote went. And like it was, they believed all that we was going to be welcome as liberators.
You know,
I didn't believe none of that for a second.
You know, you're exactly right, Bill. I mean, I'm not the brightest bulb in the house.
No, I'm far from it.
And you know, we had enough experts on this show before that started, and Scott Ritter, for one. They can say what they want to about Scott Ritter, but I will tell you this, 100% of what Scott Ritter predicted about this thing has come absolutely true.
All came true. All of it.
Every bit of it. He swore there were no WMDs there. And, you know, and I talked to him, we had him on the show, I think, three or four times. And basically, and I got to tell you, I kept having him on the show because I kept trying to crack him and say, come on, Scott, you know.
I listened to all those shows, Guy, and he was right on in everything that he said.
Yeah, yeah, he was not, they tried to smear him, they tried everything, He said they absolutely wouldn't find any WMDs there. He knew for a fact. I mean, he put his reputation on the line, and him and Mohammed Al-Baradei, they worked closely together, and they were absolutely 100% correct.
Boy, Guy, just think of how those troops that are over there right now feel we don't get the news from there. There's no reporting. I mean, when was the last time you seen somebody like Dan Rather reporting from Baghdad or from here or there, you know?
We're not
just the canned stuff that they give you, which I'm just guessing on that because I don't watch that anymore.
And yesterday, did you see what our esteemed senator from Oklahoma said yesterday, Inhofe?
I don't think I did catch that.
He's capable of saying, I mean, he stood on the Senate
floor. He's a real work of art, isn't he?
Oh, he's nuts. And yesterday he said that what we've done in Iraq is a miracle.
Oh my God, you're kidding!
He said it's a miracle things are going so great. He used that word. It's a miracle.
Who from his family's over there?
I'm trying to count here. I'm not getting very far. It's fascinating that this man, you know. I called the newspaper, the Tulsa newspaper in Tulsa, and I got a hold of the reporter that printed that story, and I think I'm going to have him on the show tomorrow. Now he sent me a nice note back, and he said, "Now I can appear on your show, but keep in mind I'm not a commentator; I'm a reporter, so I can't give you an opinion about Inhofe, but I can answer some questions."
That'd really be great.
Yeah, I may have him on tomorrow, but like he said, he can't, since he's just a reporter, he can't comment and say that Imhoff is nuts, but how could you be around him very much and not know that he is? This guy's crazy.
How's somebody taking, say, well, my vote's for Imhoff, you know that. I mean, is there that many people that are that loose cannons going around the ship?
Evidently. I mean, that guy said so many crazy things by now that I would think almost all of Oklahoma would know he's crazy.
You know, guy, I didn't start voting until I never voted until I voted. Jimmy Carter was the first time I voted. And everybody used to say, my mom used to really get on my case. And she'd say, you know, you should vote. That's your responsibility in that. And I said, I just don't like these politicians. I see it and see how they are. And I said, they're just one step. Most of them, the majority of them, are one step ahead of a child molester.
Yeah.
And I honest to God believe that.
Yeah.
Then I thought, well, you know, she finally got to me, and I kind of like Carter, and that was the first time I voted. And I've always been able to say who I voted for and felt pretty proud of who I did vote for. But how's these people who vote for somebody like Imhoff or some of these other right-wing crazies and be able to feel good about their vote?
Oh yeah, and you look at Tom DeLay, the people in Sugarland, Texas, voted for Tom DeLay. How could there be that many people that wacky?
You go figure. You answer that question, and I'm sure that you'll be able to get a job as a consultant or somebody's party.
You know, everybody says, well, it's not my congressman. I mean, I know all of them are bad, but my congressman's a good guy. And I can tell you a case of that right up in my wife's old stomping grounds up in Northeast Ohio. We had this guy named, and you know who I'm going to say, Jim Traficant.
Oh, my God.
And Jim Traficant was the biggest crook who ever lived. And it so happens he was a Democrat. I don't care.
Yeah.
He was a lifelong Democrat. Also half nuts, and you know, he was the sheriff of Mahoning County up there, and they
I remember him well.
They literally caught him with his hands in the cookie jar, pictures of him taking bribe money.
Yeah.
And so when he was the sheriff, and so he went to court and he beat the rap and convinced the jury that he was running his own sting operation. And these other guys didn't, the FBI, and they didn't know it, and he was running his own sting operation. That's why the money changed hands, and he beat that rap. Well, you know, he...
Listen, I got to talk to you. You know what we need is a good post office scandal. I mean, with Ross Dunkowski there in Chicago.
Yeah,
I mean,
oh, yeah.
And that's how those right-wingers got in, didn't they?
Yeah, oh,
that,
yeah.
Oh, what a huge scandal that was, guy. What was that, just millions and millions of dollars, or was that like a half a mil out of all of it?
Well,
you know, that was nothing compared to what these people are doing now.
No, nobody's approached the Dukester, but Traficant, he got a lot of money personally, and somebody posted on the chat room, I wonder... Now this is a good one. I wonder how Traficant and his hair are getting along in prison.
Oh, that haircut he had.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. That was pretty embarrassing. I got to give you that. But, know, look how Gingrich and his crowd got in out of that post office scandal. That was the whole thing that turned us all around for us.
Well, that
we wouldn't be over there in Iraq right now if it wouldn't have been for that.
And the Jim Wright thing, they took full advantage of that. You know, he took advanced money for a book, and they jumped all over him and said how dirty.
But boy, the investigations are hot and heavy right now, aren't they? With all this thievery and everything that's going on, you don't hear nothing. There hasn't been one congressional panel set up. Just absolutely nothing. They got to feel good about themselves.
Well, you know, I was just thinking the other day, here we were going through this impeachment trial. I was talking to John Dean about it, and we went through this impeachment thing, and they were tarring and feathering Bill Clinton over this. And here we had Henry Hyde. a known adulterer from the Chicago
area. There two of them come out of the woodwork over that. What was the other guy?
Well, we had Bob Barr from Georgia.
Now there's three because that wasn't the other guy.
Well, we had Newt Gingrich, you know. He was having a torrid affair with his office staff.
That's not the guy I'm thinking of either.
And the other one you're talking about is Dan Burton, maybe.
Oh, that's it.
And don't forget, we've left one out. How about Bob Livingston? Bob the dominatrix loving Livingston. So all this is going on while they're crucifying Clinton. I mean, you know,
don't you wish we could go back to good old days?
Well, at least Gingrich
had the only thing we had to worry about.
At least Gingrich.
You could laugh about it. You could joke about it. None of this is funny today.
No.
This is all serious. These are people are dying on both sides, Iraqis. I feel so terrible for those Iraqis. Hey, no, none of those people ever hurt me.
No.
Never done a thing to me.
No, but if you listen to the right-wing spin, you'd have them think they were ready to launch 1,000 nukes at it back when the war started.
Excuse me. I've met a lot of those people. Not a lot, but I mean a few from the Middle East. Store owners and people of men in bars and that. And, of course, that was a long time ago. I quit drinking a long time ago. But, I mean, those Middle East people are really pretty friendly people. I've never met a bad one yet.
Yeah, yeah. I know what you mean. I know a lot of Lebanese people. Of course, I think everybody
does.
Yeah,
Lebanese, that's some. And I've met some people from... not Beirut, but from, that'd be Lebanon, yeah.
Yeah.
But they're real nice people. They're always real friendly. And
you're in Toledo, right?
That's correct, yeah.
You get a brand of ice cream there called Velvet Ice Cream?
Oh, yeah.
that's a Lebanese-owned company. And
that right? I didn't know that.
The guy that owned it is from my hometown, and I knew him very, very well. A wonderful group of Lebanese folks. Yeah.
I thought I'd give you a call today and put it
well,
in.
Well, thanks. I'm glad you did. Now you can go back and do your homework on Henry Hyde, Bob Barr, Newt Gingrich, Dan Burton, and Bob Livingston. I expect a full report.
Well, there's some real reading there, but yeah. I just keep going back. I came up on that post office scandal.
Yeah.
And I did a little bit of research on it. And I thought, well, I'm going to take in a call guy and talk about that because that was a lot to do about nothing. Yeah, there was, Dan Roskinkowski, a lot of that I was reading, he was using that money to take and pay people that was working in his office. And not a very little, I think, of that money actually went into that man's pocket.
Yeah, but, you know, it was wrong, and it was wrong.
It wasn't like these people, like, what's his name out there in California, enriched himself with big boats and huge homes and that.
Right.
It wasn't anything like that.
No. He was the most bold one of them that's ever been, I think, Duke Cunningham. So actually printing up a
list. I really like that guy, Roskinkowski. He was a hell of a speaker, I know that.
Yep. Oh, yes, he was. And, I guess he's doing some consulting nowadays. Got that whole deal behind him. So
yeah, hey, that's what I read too.
Thanks for your call, Bill.
Listen, it was great talking to you today, guy.
So long.
You got a great show, and listen, everybody out there listening, chip in a few bucks. Let's help this guy out. Let's keep him on the air.
Yeah, that would help. Thank you. That's an unsolicited ad. Thank you,
that's
Bill.
Fine.
Yeah, you can give us a call, too, you know, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. And I noticed some people in the chat room, they're talking about the Horn chat room, Head on Radio Network chat room, talking about having Arab folks and friends. I had a lot of Lebanese friends, hard-working group of people, and came over here. There's far more Lebanese people living outside of Lebanon than there are living in Lebanon. But come over here for a better life and worked their asses off and got ahead. And some of them I know got really ahead. And so I've always respected them as hardworking, good, decent, honest people. And they're Muslims, too. So those of you that are wanting to crucify every Muslim in the country and do all this awful profiling and all that, you can just cram it. They don't deserve that. I don't know what the answer is to the terrorism, but I'll tell you one thing. It isn't against, making a bunch of innocent folks pay. That's what it's not about. We're going to pause for a break right now. Stick around. We'll be back in a couple of minutes with more of the Guy James Show.
I had a dream the other night. Now, in my dream, our national bird had become the ostrich. How much can we take? How much can we give? How much is too much, and how much longer can we live? As we turn our backs, turn our eyes, and pretend we don't see. If ignorance is bliss, then full of bliss are we. There's no other way to say it. We've been lied to and misled into another senseless war. How many thousands must lay dead before we wake up from this nightmare and revive the American dream? If we blindly stay the course, this horse will drown us in the stream. Let's take our heads out of the sand. Take our hands out of the sand and finally realize that our tomorrows will depend on what we do today. Don't stay the course on a horse that's going the wrong way. Now the political pollution is so thick and dark and dense. It contaminates and poisons common good and common sense. Ignorance, indifference, and greed so deep they burn. Why must so many be engulfed in flame before they learn? Let's take our heads out of the sand and open up our eyes. Let's take our heads out of the sand and finally realize that our tomorrows will depend on what we do today. Don't stay the course on a horse that's going the wrong way. You don't stay the course on a horse that's going the wrong way. How much can we take? How much can we give? How much is too much and how much longer?
What do you personally think about all this profiling that's taking place and great desire for profiling? Now we have the people overseas. See, the English folks on a plane the other day demanded they throw a couple of Arabs off the plane. What do you think? Would it scare you? Would it scare you to be on a plane and you see some darker-skinned people than you on there that you figure are from the Middle East? Would you be concerned? Would you? I don't think I would. I really don't think I would. I mean, if they, you know, they had an AK-47 in their hand or something. But we're screened so well when we get on airplanes nowadays. I don't know. I don't think it would bother me, you know. And every time I see this come up, I think of the detention camps back during the Second World War. I think of the horrible way that the United States of America treated black people for so long. And make no mistake about it, there's still rampant pockets of racism in this country. Don't kid yourself. You know, we're Americans. We do not hate. We do not torture. We do not bomb innocent people. We do not spy on our own citizens without warrants. And we do not lie to this nation about the reasons to go to war. And we don't ignore our brothers and sisters in times of a natural disaster like Katrina. And we don't sell our country to the best connected lobbyist or the highest bidder like they're doing in Washington right now. We always embrace tolerance and diversity and this beauty. And I think it really is this beautiful thing that you could call the American mosaic. We believe that all of our citizens, and that all covers, it covers them all, baby. They're all guaranteed the inalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness and equal protection of the laws. The Bushes would have you forget that. We believe in a woman's right to choose. We believe in a strong national defense. And take heed, you right-wingers, a strong national defense built on actions, not empty words and photo ops. Mission impossible or mission accomplished and photo ops, you know what I'm talking about. And we believe in sound economics, not endless deficits as far as the eye can see, funded by foreign nations that are really putting our country at risk right now. And we as a nation, we believe in truth. And we honor and respect our fellow citizens enough to tell them the truth, always. And we should especially always have the truth from our politicians. They work for us. We're Americans. And we want to take this country back. And it's time. It's time right now. We can't let her slide anymore. We cannot. And I, you know, talking about this profiling and so forth, I heard a story the other day, and I had to go look it up because, frankly, I just couldn't believe it. And I can't take the time to go into the whole thing. I could, but it would bore you. But any of you ever drive around with, any of you ever drive around with a lot of money in your car? I'm talking a lot of money. I've had an occasion to do it a couple of times. A lot of money. Cash. And there was nothing illegal about the money I had in my automobile. And a federal appeals court ruled yesterday, actually it's about 3 days ago, that if a motorist is carrying large sums of money, it is automatically subject to confiscation. Get this. Police may seize cash from motorists even in the absence of any evidence that a crime has been committed. Now, this actually happened. A federal appeals court ruled that if a motorist is carrying large sums of money, it is automatically subject to confiscation in the case entitled the United States of America v. $124,700 in U.S. currency. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Eighth Circuit took that amount of cash away from Emiliano Gomez Gonzalez, a man with a lack of significant criminal history, neither accused nor convicted of any crime. Please take note of that. He was not accused, nor was he convicted of any crime. On May 28, 2003, a Nebraska state trooper signaled Gonzalez to pull over his rented Ford Taurus on Interstate 80. The trooper intended to issue a speeding ticket, but noticed that Gonzalez's name was not on the rental contract. The trooper then proceeded to question Gonzalez, who did not speak English well, and searched the car. The trooper found a cooler containing $124,700 in cash, which he confiscated. A trained drug-sniffing dog barked at the rental car and the cash. For the police, this was all the evidence needed to establish a drug crime that allows the force to keep the seized money. Now, keep in mind, he was in a rental car. God only knows how many people had rented that car. And most drug people will tell you that drug officers, enforcement officers will tell you it is not unusual at all to have a drug dog bark at money coming out of a lot of people's billfolds because it's changed hands and the residue stays on the drugs and the dogs can pick it up. Associates of Gonzalez testified in court that they had pooled their life savings to purchase a refrigerated truck to start a produce business. Gonzalez flew on a one-way ticket to Chicago to buy a truck, but it had been sold by the time he arrived. Without a credit card of his own, he had a third party rent the car for him. Gonzalez hid the money in a cooler to keep it from being noticed and stolen. He was scared when the troopers began questioning him about it. There was no evidence disputing Gonzalez's story. no evidence. But the Eighth Circuit Court summarily dismissed Gonzalez's story. It overturned a lower court ruling that had found no evidence of drug activity, stating, "We respectfully disagree and reach a different conclusion. Possession of a large sum of cash is, quote, strong evidence of a connection to drug activity," end quote, even though there was no evidence. Now, how'd you like to be like this guy, and you've borrowed this money from five or six different friends to come and buy a refrigerated truck in America, and they take it away from you and rule in court that you have no recourse? I'm appalled by that story. The old innocent until proven guilty, right out the window. How could this happen? How could this happen? There were no drugs, no drug paraphernalia, no drug records. He had no... the guy had been picked up for drunken driving once. Is the only thing he ever had on his record. And they take away all this cash. And I can tell you, and you probably know this, living where I live, there's a large Hispanic community. My brother lives in a very large Hispanic community out in the Phoenix, Arizona area. A lot of the Hispanic folks deal strictly in cash. Not checks, cash. Very few credit cards ever. So I would not have found this at all unusual that this man, you know, I have a good friend that sold a truck recently to a couple of Hispanic brothers, and it was $6,500, and they pulled out $65, $100 bills and paid him for it. That's how they do it. And so this man went home back to Mexico without his money. I think that's terrible. I really do. Well, 5 minutes before, actually 4 minutes before the hour, coming up on 4 minutes before the hour, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. After the top of the hour, right along 4:15, we're going to talk to a gentleman by, and I'm not sure I have his last name right, Bruce Borsica. I hope I got that right. Anyway, he's an expert on extracting oil out of the ground, and I don't know. Yeah, you listen and you make up your minds of what he has to say. He says we're not running out of oil. So, and he doesn't say that in a way that hey, let's just start wasting all the oil that we can and still drive the big tankers. I parked in a parking lot yesterday at the grocery store. And I had one of those Hummers on both sides of me. I felt like I was in the middle of a canyon. Yeah, not the new little ones, the two of the big ones. Man, those things are big. And I guess they don't do so great on any of you got one of those? If you do, give me a call and let me know what kind of gas mileage you get on it. I'd really like to know. Can't be much. What are you doing about the high price of gas? Are you driving less? Which they found not to be the case so far, or are you eating at home more than you do? Are you cutting back on your eating out? Are you cutting down on your discretionary spending? Some of the little luxuries that you had, you can't have anymore because you're spending it at the gas pump. What are you doing? Because of the high price of gas, some of you, does it bother you? Does it bother you at all? I know a guy who says, "I don't care. Yeah, it's a little more. I don't care." Well, it bothers me. It certainly does bother me. I don't drive that car anymore than I have to. I've got a bicycle, and that bicycle serves me well. Hey, and someone says on the chat room here saying, "I've got two Priuses. Happy, happy." Well, I guess you would be. And what kind of gas mileage you get on those Priuses? You get over 40? 45? I think I know a gentleman claims he gets about 47 or so. I think that's what he told me. That would sure look about better than the low 20s that I get on my vehicle right now. But, man, it does hurt, doesn't it? Pull up $50 at the gas tank. Some of you spend more than that. And just think about that, how much that's gone up in the last couple of years into your budget. And it's caused grocery prices to go up. Your home energy prices, home heating and air conditioning is going to, and the guy says on the chat room here, says they get 50 mile per gallon on that Prius. Good for you. Double good for you. Makes me very envious. What's going to happen? How long is the battery life good for on there? How long do they guarantee the battery pack for on the Prius? I'd like to know. The reason I ask is I heard somebody going at it the other day saying if that battery pack goes bad, and I don't know if he was talking about it. He called into the local station here. So if that battery pack goes bad, it's going to cost you $8,000 to buy another one. So I don't know if he had his slightest idea what he was talking about or not. I really don't know. Anyway, you are listening to the Guy James Show, and we're going to pause for the news at the top of the hour. We hope you'll stay with us, and we're having interesting guests right after we come back. Stay tuned on the Head On Radio Network with more of the Guy James Show coming up after the news.
This is the Quality News Network. Israel's foreign minister is calling the situation in Lebanon explosive and urging the international community to quickly deploy peacekeeping troops there. On the other hand, Syria's president says the deployment of those troops would be considered a hostile act and would result in Syria closing its border with Lebanon. The makeup of those troops still being discussed today in Belgium. Lebanon's prime minister is urging the U.S. to convince Israel to lift the air and sea embargo it imposed at the beginning of the 34-day war with Hezbollah. Also asking Washington for more funding to help in the rebuilding of the country. Diplomats from Europe, the U.S., Russia, and China are still studying the details of Iran's counterproposal to the incentives offered in exchange for Tehran suspending its uranium enrichment program. Both Russia and China are in favor of Iran's call for negotiations. France, on the other hand, says the door is still open for negotiations, but only if Iran suspends its nuclear program first, something Tehran appears reluctant to do. A CD showing the two Fox News journalists kidnapped in the Palestinian territory 9 days ago has been obtained by a Gaza news agency. On it, they appear to be in good health. A previously unknown group claims responsibility for their abduction, but why they kidnapped the two men is still not clear. A Northwest Airlines jetliner bound for Mumbai, India from Amsterdam today aborted his flight plan and returned to the Netherlands escorted by two Dutch fighter jets because of suspicious behavior by several passengers on board. Dutch police are still questioning a number of those passengers. They have detained 12 of them. The flight has been rescheduled for tomorrow. Investigators have located the black boxes in a Russian airliner that crashed in a thunderstorm yesterday in the Ukraine, killing all 170 aboard. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki is insisting that Iraq will be ready to take control of most of its provinces by the end of this year. Nevertheless, the U.S. Marines are calling up about 2,500 inactive reservists to return to duty in Iraq and Afghanistan for 12 to 18-month tours. A federal judge in San Francisco has blocked a Bush administration plan to permit commercial logging in California's Sequoia National Monument, the judge ruling in favor of lawsuits filed by environmental groups and the state's attorney general. Alaska's Republican Governor Frank Murkowski has lost his bid for a second term. He was defeated in yesterday's primary by the former mayor of the town of Wasilla, Sarah Palin. She'll face former Democratic Governor Tony Knowles in November. And the government says that traffic deaths in the U.S. are at their highest level since 1990. Partly due to an increase in motorcycle and pedestrian fatalities. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business news is next. It's now 2:30 past the hour.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Sales of existing homes dropped more than expected last month to their lowest pace since January of 2004. Smithfield Foods, the nation's largest hog and pork producer, says its quarterly earnings fell 50%, largely because of higher production costs and losses on its cattle feed investment. IBM says it's buying Internet Security Systems, which performs network monitoring and analysis services for companies. The price tag is $1.3 billion in cash. Nestle reports an 11% increase in net profit for the first half of this year. A costly mistake by the federal government, which has erroneously sent out reimbursement checks for prescription drug coverage premiums to about 230,000 Medicare recipients, checks to which they are not entitled and which will have to be returned. Gateway Computer has received an offer to sell its retail operations for about $500 million. 2 years ago, Gateway closed 188 retail stores, now sells its computers through major electronic stores. And a class action lawsuit has been filed in Georgia against the parent company of Orkin, saying it failed to prevent termite damage as promised through reinspections and retreatments. Gold is trading down 20 cents an ounce at this hour at $633.80. Silver's at $12.68. And light sweet crude is down $1.75 a barrel at $71.35. The markets are all down this hour on Wall Street. The Dow down 65 points at 11,275. NASDAQ down 20 at 2130. And the S&P 500 down 8 at 1291. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana Walter, and it's now 5 minutes past the hour.
God bless America.
The only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Ah, yes, we are back. Another cough drop. There, had to get rid of that echo in here. Yeah, another cough drop. Maybe it'll last another hour and we'll make it through the day. Doggone. You know what? Do any of you run into this? I mean, it seems like we live in an area here where there's, maybe in the neighborhood of around, 750,000 people, pretty close by. And so it's not a small area, and there are tons and tons and tons of doctors. You know, the doctor parks all over the place, and lots of doctors. So I'm telling another personal story, so you go ahead and go to sleep here for a minute or two, but some of you might sympathize. I'm looking for sympathy is what I'm doing here. I got the first allergy attack of my life here last spring, and it just hung on. And finally, as stubborn as I am, I finally went to a doctor, and he gave me some medication for it, and it went away. And I was like, great, this is great. I'll never have to go through that again. Well, here we are. It's back. And that doctor retired. So I go through the phone book today or yesterday looking for allergist. I got to find me a new allergist, and I start calling one after the other after the other. There's not that many. There's about 8 or 9 in the area. And you know what most of them told me? All except this wonderful Dr. Montgomery that I do have an appointment with. The quickest I could get into any of them was the first week in November. Do you ever run into that? I've run into that before with other things. We can get you in the first week in November. Oh, well, wait a minute. I don't know if I'm going to be suffering the first week in November. I am suffering now, however. But, I can't wait till the first week in November. Well, we're sorry. That's the best you can do. Our doctor has a branch office 75 miles away. You can drive up there if you want to and maybe get in the last week of October. I don't know. That's the second time I've run into that this year. Hey, doc, I need help now. And they said, well, go to the emergency room. And we wonder what's wrong with our health care system. I'm not blaming that on any specific doctor, but, go to the emergency room. And you know what that bill is. Can you get out of the emergency room now? with a bill any less than of about $1,000, can you? I'd be surprised if you could get out of an emergency room with a bill less than $1,000. If they do anything at all to you. And here we are in a country, they say anyway, with the greatest health care available in the world. I guess the word is available. The only trouble is it's not available to everybody. I think it's a doggone shame. But just wonder if any of you run into that around the country where you might live, that doctor tell you you can't get in for, what is that, a month and a half from now? Yeah. I don't know. You know, the worst thing about having allergies, as long as I'm beating that subject to death, is you can't sleep at night. I can't. People say, well, you know, get in your easy chair and sleep in your easy chair, your head upright. Well, I can't sleep like that. Can you? I can't. Anyway, 866, and enough of my maladies here. 866-546-5254. Love to hear from you today. Have you noticed that a lot of these Republicans are starting to act like rats off a sinking ship? Some of the statements I've heard some of them make lately, our mission in Iraq has failed, stay in the course is pointless, and it's time to start thinking about Plan B, how we might disengage with the least damage possible. And another one I heard recently, we do need a president who I think is intellectually curious. You can say that again. And that is a big question, whether George W. Bush has the intellectual curiousness, if that's a word, to continue leading this country over the next couple of years. And another one, quote, a foreign policy realists consider Middle East stability the goal. The realist critics who regard realism as reprehensibly unambitious considered stability the problem. That problem has been solved. All right, who are these cut and run, blame America first whiners here? Well, the first quote was from William Buckley, our mission in Iraq has failed. The second one was from Thomas Friedman, said we need a president who's intellectually curious. And then we had one from Joe Scarborough and the final one from George Will. Bunch of real left-wing anti-Americans there, right? And then on Scarborough's show last week, and we played you the recording of that, his topic was whether George Bush's mental weakness is damaging Americans' credibility at home and abroad. And for 10 whole minutes during a show, and I happened to see that, and I know some of you did as well, there was a caption at the bottom of the screen that said, "Is Bush an idiot?" I turned that on. I couldn't believe it. When someone told Scarborough that other presidents had been called stupid, Scarborough replied, "I think George Bush is in a league by himself. I don't think he has the intellectual depth as these other people." Well, that's absolutely true. And also jumping the ship is Rich Lowry. In April 2005, he wrote, "It is time to say it unequivocally. We are winning in Iraq." But just this month, his bubbling enthusiasm changed to, quote, "Success in Iraq seems more out of reach than it has at any time since the initial invasion 3 years ago." And Lowry was... he was also asked whether Iraq is Bush's Vietnam. Why do these conservatives hate America so much? Have you wondered about that? Gosh, they seem to, don't they? With saying things like that, asking whether our president is an idiot, saying that he's intellectually incurious, saying staying the course is pointless. These people are anti-American, these right-wingers. How dare they say that about our president? Want to do a show here soon. I don't know if we can get away with doing a whole show on it, but got to talking to some friends yesterday about this, about vacations. And where I live here is a vacation destination area for many people from around the world. We get a tremendous number of people coming from Europe and even South America here. But we get lots and lots of foreign people here for their vacations. And so many people live here, they serve, have work in service industries that serve these travelers when they come here. And, of course, traveling is down a little bit this year. But what about you? Are you getting a vacation here this year? Getting a vacation anywhere this year? There's a survey out right now that shows that 40% of the people, 40% of Americans are not going to take a vacation this year. And a quarter of the private sector gets no paid holidays at all. Imagine that. no paid holidays, and 40% of the people are not going to take a summer. They can't afford it. The gas, what are you going to do? What are you going to tell the kids? I'll take vacation, and we'll just go down to the summer. We'll go down to the park here, down the street, and play baseball. That doesn't cut it anymore for a lot of these kids. What a shame. And, you know, it's already a common knowledge on the beaches and the cafes of Europe and that Americans work too hard. And it's, you know, it's well known on the other side of the Atlantic that Europeans, above all the French and the Germans, are slackers who could do with a bit of America's vigorous work ethic. But, man, do they ever get to vacation. Woo. Even those vacation American employees do take are rapidly vanishing to the extent that 40% of the workers questioned at the start of this summer said they had no plans to take any holiday at all for the next 6 months, more than at any time since the late 70s. Well, there you have it. The price of gas, wages being cut, spending, discretionary spending literally disappearing. It's probably mere coincidence that George Bush, one of the few Americans who's had, he's really been known to enjoy a French-style month-off vacation during August, cut back his holiday in Texas this year to a fortnight. But the survey by the Conference Board Research Group, along with other recent statistics, suggests an epidemic of overwork among ordinary Americans. And isn't it a damn shame? You know, I'm getting to that age where I've finally figured out that life is really short. And yeah, you should go out and have the best doggone time you can in this life. It is short. But a lot of people, their lives are work, go home and sleep, and go back to work. And a lot of people work 7 days a week. You'd be surprised how many people work 7 days a week. Yours truly works 7 days a week. So the average American gets a little less than 4 weeks of paid time off, and I'm not sure I believe that. That includes public holidays, compared to 6.6 weeks in the UK, where the law requires a minimum of 4 weeks off for full-time workers, and 7.9 weeks for those lucky Italians. One study showed that people employed by the U.S. subsidiary of a London-based bank would have to work there for 10 years just to be entitled to the same vacation as the colleagues in Britain who just started their jobs. Wow. Interesting. So Americans, we really do have a reputation of working hard around the world. The only problem is the opportunity to work hard is starting to disappear, isn't it? A lot of our jobs are starting to go away. Many of the jobs are going away. And, you know, you go and start a new job nowadays, and you're not going to get a bunch of benefits right off the bat most of the time. And you're not going to get the benefits that people used to get with a new job. I see one of our friends, Marcus, Marcus Vidal, he lives in Phoenix. And he wrote here today, I recently moved next door to work, and I walk to work every day now. If as many people as possible could do the same as I did, it would drive that lousy oil companies right out of business. That or drive down the cost down to nothing. Well, thank you, Marcus. Very true. And we're waiting on our guests to give us a call here about this oil problem. I saw a DVD the other night that a relative brought along, and I viewed it. It was talking about I think it was called the reurbanization of America, how people are going to be, we're going to be moving back to the cities, that life is going to change dramatically because of the oil prices and so forth, that when the shortage does get here and there's not enough to fuel these big behemoths that we drive in this country. I mean, it's very common for people to drive 100 miles a day to and from work. It's very common. And, you know, think about how that might have an effect on this company, people moving like Marcus did, close to where they work. That'll change communities tremendously. It'll change people's habits tremendously. It'll really affect that. a very, very big change when that finally does happen. We'll all have to live close to work. And so will the suburbs disappear? Will all the things that people moved out into the suburbs starting in the late 40s, early 50s, moving into these big communities, hoping to have the wide open spaces and all that, will those become ghost towns and everybody be moving back to town so they can be use mass transit to go to work? You know, I was thinking of that when we were in Washington not so long ago. We were on the metro. And maybe you Washingtonians don't agree with me, but I think the metro in Washington, D.C. is just the best doggone mass transit system that I have ever seen. There may be better ones, but I've not seen them. And when I look at that, when I ride that metro in Washington, you know, clear from out in the suburbs this last time, from out around College Park, Maryland, into downtown, I mean, you're talking 30 minutes. I don't know how many miles it is, but think of how many cars that thing replaced. Think of the savings of fuel and the emissions into the air and all that. And yet, how many places in this country are building mass transit systems right now in earnest? I know they're building just a little one out in the Phoenix area, but nothing serious for a community that size. And we had one planned here in Southwest Florida. In fact, we had a referendum on it. The voters voted for it, and Jeb Bush used his influence to get it taken away, said we couldn't afford it. Now, he gave his pals all the biggest tax break they could get on their yachts and so forth, but we couldn't afford the bullet train that it was we wanted here in Southwest Florida, all over Florida, as a matter of fact. So, I don't know. I think it's a shame, and we do. When you stop and think about how much we waste. Just, it's incredible. And a friend, a real environmentalist, was telling me the other day, think about the fact that we need to save our oil. There's that cough again. We need to save our petroleum for necessities. And he started pointing out things to me that we cannot, you can't do without petroleum. I mean, we can find alternate fuels for our cars and so forth, but will we find alternate fuels for all the plastics that we use? All the chemical ways that we use petroleum? I mean, you just take a look around at whatever room you're in right now, your telephone, your computer, your ceiling tile, in the room I'm in here, in this beautiful Guy James Show studio, the soundproofing material on the walls, most of the adhesives you use, the mattresses you sleep on have foam made out of petroleum. It just goes on and on and on, and I don't think a lot of people understand just how much is used for that. So if anything, we've got to make sure that that kind of petroleum usage, that we can stall that off as long as possible, because it's not going to be easy to find an alternate fuel to the plastics. Certainly not easy at all. Well, I don't know. I hope people will be thinking about that. I know I'm certainly thinking about this next time around. But I mean, I drive a fairly small vehicle now, but you start looking at it economically as some of the, I don't know what that Prius cost, but they're not cheap. $28,000? I'm not sure. Maybe more. I'm really not sure. I shouldn't even say. But in fact, if you're on the chat room, let us know what that car costs. And it just wouldn't be cost effective for a lot of people to have one right now. You know, it'd be nice to have a brand new car and all that. Yeah, and then, you know, somebody reminded me, pharmaceuticals, most fertilizers, the pesticides, herbicides, the list goes on and on and on and on. I mean, on and on. It's just, okay, the price of a Prius says around $23,000. Okay, that's not bad. That's not bad. I thought they were more than that, so that's not too bad. I suppose that's one. Are they all automatic transmissions? Do they come with standard transmissions at that price? Who knows? And how long do you own the car before you have to replace the battery pack in it? That's one thing I want to know. I'm going to have to do a little research on that sooner or later. I got a great book in the mail today, and we're going to have an interview. The interview we're supposed to have right now is late, and I hope they will call in. That's the trouble. When I arrange an interview, I usually like to have it so that I do the call-in instead of they call in, and usually when they call in, they're usually late, and it messes up your schedule. Got a new book in, and I started to read it, and it's called Enemy Combatant, My Imprisonment at Guantanamo, Bagram, and Kandahar, by a man by the name of Mozam Beg. And if you want to see something frightening of what they can do to somebody that they suspect of being a terrorist, who is not a terrorist by any stretch of the imagination, man, oh man, this is quite a book. And we're going to have him on next week. I've got a hold of his scheduler today, and I think we'll have it on have him on next week. But he really has an amazing story to tell. It's a serious indictment of the USA for eroding the rule of law by disregarding habeas corpus, and just the way they, you know, the apartheid people did down in South Africa. And Bishop Tutu even recommended this book, so you do want to read this. It's called Enemy Combatant, My Imprisonment at Guantanamo, Bagram, and Kandahar. And we'll be talking to Mozam Beg, the author of it, next week sometime. I'm not sure what day for sure, but I'm thinking Wednesday. It's interesting looking at the chat room. I guess the car, the Prius car, doesn't shift. It's all synchro. They don't even shift. No shift point. Well, that's good. And they were hard to get here for a while. I went down and I wanted to see one day. I wasn't considering buying one, but I wanted to see one and price one. The guy said, "Are you kidding?" He said, "I haven't had one of those on the around here." He said, "We get them in and they're gone. We've got a long list of people waiting for them." So, but on the other hand, you do see a tremendous number of cars. Tremendous number of cars. Advertising with 300, 350 horsepower and so forth. I mean, gas guzzlers. I'm talking big-time gas guzzlers. And they're selling them like there's no tomorrow. There's a Hummer dealership right up the road, a couple of miles up the road from where I live here, and he must have, oh my God, he must have 200 Hummers sitting up there. I mean, they're just all over the place, and I see them all over the place. Wow, I do wonder about things like that, I do. Well, our guest isn't calling in. 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. And we're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back.
Didn't know I was an American, but choosing to give a damn. Or unpatriotic for daring to take a stand for what I believe in. Looks like right onto me, expressions of liberty, warning our America to be a responsible hegemony. Didn't know I was a communist, but wanting to share the wealth. It doesn't take an economist to measure the cost of health. And what I believe in looks like heaven to me. One human family, where everybody's got enough to eat. Something more to cover the feet. Didn't know I'd be labeled a terrorist.
trying to speak my mind. It's becoming more precarious for failing to toe the line in what I believe in. Sounds like freedom to me, like the Sons of Liberty in 1773. Dumping 45 tons of tea. Of people who love the earth, I hope it becomes a priority before it gets any worse. And what I believe in looks like heaven to me. The angels take the shape of a tree, giving us clean air to breathe. Rivers to the mountains and streams. You know I hated my country for acknowledging the truth. This most despicable profiteering at the expense of our youth. And what I believe in looks like heaven to me. All of humanity living as community in relative harmony.
Wow, I think that sounded bad. I don't know. Sound a little muffled on that song today. I don't know. I'll have to jack those guys up. They'll do a little better job next time. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. It's half past the hour. Got a half hour left in the show, and I sincerely hope some of you give us a call. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Do your duty and give us a call today. I don't know how we got off on the subject. I must have started it. Talking about cars. And we were going to be talking about oil wells, so I guess that's maybe where it started. To answer a couple of questions that on the chat room here I couldn't quite get to Johnny O. Well, he asked what the price of a barrel of oil now. I wonder if they uncapped all the wells that they capped in 1978 through 1981. I have to tell you, in the area I'm from, they capped a tremendous number of small wells. Never were any big ones there. If you got one that was 1,000 barrels a day, it was huge. I guess I didn't know one was 2,000. But anyway, a bunch of small areas. There are little pockets in Illinois and Ohio, and I live not far from one in Ohio. Imagine, they used to burn the gas off. You could see at night, you could tell where the oil field was because the sky was lit up at night with the natural gas being burned off. Well, imagine that. But they did cap a lot of those wells, and a lot of them, a lot of them were, pumping 15, 20 barrels, 10 barrels a day, whatever. And when the price got down so low, they just capped them. It wasn't worth it for them to pump that oil anymore. So they're bound to be, at the price of $70 a barrel or more, they're bound to be uncapping a lot of those wells. And that's what I wanted to talk about today with this gentleman talking about the steam process. Yes, I know that they are using it overseas some, but here in this country, they're not using it much at all. They use super hot steam injected under great pressure into a dry well that fragments the rock formations down to 12,000 feet. And it releases oil in amounts sometimes that far exceed what the well produced in its lifespan. And a geologist in this gentleman's article, geologists agree that as much as 85% of the Earth's oil reserves remain trapped in these formations, and what has been pumped out today is a small fraction of what remains. That's what he says, and that's why I'm looking forward to talking to him. Last year, his son teamed up with Hobson Secondary Oil of New Jersey and proved beyond any doubt in 15 field tests that the technology works flawlessly in less than an hour after injecting 800-degree steam into dry, capped wells. They began to flow at rates up to 1,500 barrels a day without any negative impact on the environment. So you can see why I would have enjoyed talking to the gentleman. I don't know what happened. We had a miscommunications or what. Maybe we'll have him on at a later date. Looking at some of these other questions. Buy an SUV and ruin the planet here. Well, SUVs. SUVs are everywhere. SUVs are literally just everywhere. I mean, you go to the parking lot nowadays, and some of them don't get such bad mileage. I know some of the, medium-sized ones now are starting to get close to 30, and of course Ford's got that little hybrid, that Escape is it called. I understand that does around 30, but hey, let's face it, folks, we're the days of the Guzzler is over, and it'll take a while for them to completely die off, but we're just not going to be able to do it anymore. It was a phase that we went through in this country, and all things like that come to an end, and it is going to come to an end. We're going to have trouble some of these days not even being able to produce enough electricity. Have you thought about that? You heard about, that our infrastructure, our grids for the electricity aren't what they ought to be. Hence the brownouts and blackouts that we've had lately, especially up north in New York. And what was it, 2 or 3 years ago, that huge one that started up in Canada and just a domino effect had millions of people. Without electricity, and it always happens in the mid or late afternoon when the air conditioners are running and so forth. Our grid, our electric grids in this country aren't set up for the massive growth that has taken place in some of these areas. It's just not. It isn't here. Well, where I live, every time we have a storm, electric goes off. I mean, it flickers every afternoon about this time, and we have battery power, but the country is not prepared in many, many ways, and here we are spending a minimum now of, $350 billion on a war that never should have been, wasting resources, massive resources and lives over there, when the infrastructure of our country could use some serious help, Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, this is Bruce. I was trying to call in, but your lines are not ringing through.
Oh, well, hi, Bruce. You got through.
Yeah, I did.
Glad to have you with us. Bruce, help me out. How do you pronounce your last name?
Corsica.
I thought so. I was going to take a chance. 50-50, I've been right. I would have been right on it anyway. I'm glad that you called. We've been kind of winging it here a little bit, talking about this subject. And I read your article that was in the Baltimore Chronicle the other day.
There?
Yeah. And I'm finding this fascinating. And some of my listeners have got questions. We've been talking about it here. Why don't you tell us a little bit of what this whole thing is about, your article you called Plenty of Oil that you wrote on Sunday.
Well, I've done a little research on the supposed oil shortage in the world, and what I discovered is very much like the diamond industry. this industry of oil and gas is not really a free market supply and demand. Or it is, but the supply is artificial. It's controlled and manipulated by the oil companies. There's plenty of oil. As a matter of fact, in North America alone, there's probably close to a trillion barrels of oil. The problem is that we have insufficient refining capacity. And with all the billions of dollars in profits the oil companies have been making, they have not built a new refinery in over 20 years. Same situation with our storage tanks. Most of our storage facilities are in the Gulf Coast. They're all full to capacity. The refineries are filled to capacity, and that's just where the oil companies would like to keep it because that's where the prices remain the highest. If they were to build another refinery, the prices would come down, and they've also been ignoring technology that has been around for years. In the article that I wrote in the Baltimore Chronicle, I mentioned that back in 1980, the U.S. Department of Energy issued a white paper on steam injection recovery for oil wells. And they said it would probably work and it would recover far more oil than was ever pumped out of a well. And the best way to explain this to somebody, if you ever have an oil stain in your driveway, no matter how much you scrub that stain with detergents and cleansers, you still have that stain. But if you take some sawdust and you put it on top of that stain and you let it sit there for a few weeks, it actually absorbs the oil out of the concrete into the sawdust. And when we pump out an oil well, if you can imagine an underground lake of oil, so to speak, let's say you pump that well dry. The reservoir, the cavity, may be dry, but in the surrounding bedrock and shale formations, you have 8 to 10 times more oil absorbed into that rock than what came out of the reservoir. So using the same concept of the sawdust, technology was devised between 1980 and 1990. It was patented by a fellow out of New Jersey named Sam Miller, who's now deceased. Which proved that you could fragment the rock formation and with heat force the oil out of the surrounding bedrock and shale and pump out 8 to 10 times more oil than whatever came out of that well. For 200-300 feet around the cavity, you have oil absorption.
Wow, that much. Well, that would we have a tremendous number of capped wells in this country, do we not? That
yes, we do. In North America and Mexico, for Canada, U.S., and Mexico, there's over 3,800 capped wells. The only well this technology will not work on is a methane well, because in the process of what you're really doing is going to the wellhead and force feeding super hot steam at over 800 degrees down into the well at over 2,500 pounds per square inch, which is just about what's inside of a scuba tank when you're thinking of pressure. And when you're forcing that down there, there can't be any explosive gasolines because the heat alone might cause it to explode. So that's why methane wells are not suitable, but methane wells are only about 10% of our capped wells.
Well, what about the cost effectiveness of doing this?
Well, there's a company out of New Jersey called Hobson Secondary Oil. I forward you a copy of the package that I received from them. And what they do is they approach oil companies and say, look, we won't charge you a dime for injecting the steam and creating an oil flow where there is none today, but we do want a percentage of what comes out of the well. And the oil companies knows this technology works. There's been 15 successful field tests, and every one of them was successful, created an oil flow where there was none before, anywhere from 250 barrels a day to 1,500 barrels a day. And the fact that the oil companies just turn a blind eye makes us kind of wonder, you know, why aren't they jumping all over this?
Well, I'll tell you, I think I know the answer, and you probably do as well. I had an oil executive tell me some time back when oil prices started going sky high, and I was complaining about it. And don't you guys have any empathy for the American public? First of all, no, they don't have any empathy for the American public. And secondly, his answer was very, very simple. Why should I produce and refine 2 million gallons of gasoline when I can get the same price for 1 million?
That's correct.
That's it in a nutshell.
The market is artificially created by the oil companies, and by controlling the supply, they can maintain that price as high as possible. And what people need to realize is our government officials are well aware of this. And although they may publicly come out and empathize and say they feel our pain, in reality, they have far more tax revenues today than they ever did, because fuel taxes pay for about 60% of all government budgets, whether it's at the state, federal, or municipal level. And if you go to API.org, which is the American Petroleum Institute, they break down the cost of gasoline at the pumps, and you'll see that over half of the money we pay at the gas pump ends up going into government taxes. So why would the government want to collect less taxes than more by implementing new technology that could, realistically, if steam injection was utilized, gasoline would drop down below a dollar a gallon. And that's no exaggeration. If you work the math backwards, we would not have to, first of all, it costs $1.90 to import a barrel of oil from Saudi Arabia or Kuwait. That cost would be eliminated immediately because we could get oil right here at home.
That's the shipping charge you're talking about?
That's correct. And in Canada alone, by the way, this technology also works on shale oil deposits. And shale is one of the most absorbent rocks for petroleum. It just like a sponge absorbs it. And just by heating shale, the oil starts oozing out. If you had a piece of shale and you took a little Bunsen burner torch and held the shale over the oil, you'd see in less than a minute the oil coming out of that shale. Steam has the same effect without posing any environmental problems. You know, steam is just superheated water.
Yes. Well, all right. There are many, and as you well know, are you in Ohio?
Yes.
Okay, I thought I read where you were in Parma. I'm a former Buckeye myself. There are several little oil fields in Ohio. One up around the Warren in Youngstown area, and there's another one down around Mansfield, Mount Gilead, down in through there. Mm-hmm. And many of those wells are capped, and they were never big producers, but a lot of them, you know, went from 20, 30 barrels up to 1,000, 1,200 barrels, and most of those are capped now. They were capped during the when the oil went down to what I don't know, a pretty doggone low price. And as far as I know, none of those
I'm really surprised that a group of investors haven't gotten together to basically go out and buy the rights to capped wells, and then invite Hobson Secondary Oil in to inject them. I mean, there's no upfront cost to them other than, you know, you'd have to find the owner of the property and pay them a fee for the mineral rights or a royalty of what.
Well, it's usually an eighth. The owner takes the owner of the property takes an eighth of the mineral, and mm-hmm. You know, it's that way, no money out of your pocket, and it's a nice deal, especially if you end up with several of those wells on your land. What is to prohibit the Hobson Company from doing this? Since we're talking maybe a considerable length of time since some of these have been capped, are we talking about pipeline problems?
Not really. See, here's the thing. You don't, with this technology, you don't need pipelines. All you need is a fuel truck on the site, you know, a tanker, to collect the oil on a daily basis and cart it off to the refinery.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could set up a storage tank facilities. Pipelines are costly, and as we've seen in Alaska, a bit on the dangerous side. We don't need pipelines. All we need are capped wells. You know, a lot of these wells were capped not because they went dry, but because it became economically not profitable to pump anymore. When a well starts dropping off its production to about 50 barrels a day, people lose interest in that well and cap it off, and they say, well, we'll come back to this well when oil's at $100 a barrel, which may not be too far off these days.
Yeah, yeah.
So in any event, now that oil is where it is, everyone's taken a second look at this, and they now realize, hey, it's time to use this technology, but the oil companies won't cooperate.
I see. So in Ohio, for example, there's a big refinery over at Lima.
That's right.
And that's where most of the oil from the little fields in Ohio went, was over to Lima. I don't know whether it was trucked. I guess it must have been trucked. I'm not aware of any pipeline. But what are you saying here, that BP, I think BP owns that refinery, they wouldn't cooperate and buy oil? Or...
Are you there?
Hmm. Yeah.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello?
Yeah, you're there. We're still there. Hello? Hmm. Must be having trouble with his phone. Oh, gosh. Oh, well, maybe he'll call back. Well, that's enough to get us going here. Maybe he'll call back. Let me take this other call here. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy.
Yes.
How are you doing?
Okay.
This is Derek from Vermont. I didn't
Hi, Derek.
Off
hey,
here.
I may have to put you on hold just one second here. I got
to
see if
do
my
what you need to do, man.
I got
to
see if my caller got back. We got disconnected here. Hi, are you back?
Yeah, we lost you there.
Yeah, I don't know what happened there, but anyway, away we went. So how let's go back to this Hobson company. Are they having any luck?
Well, they're doing a demonstration for Petro-Canada in a couple weeks. And that looks promising. Pemex, you know, the foreign oil companies have shown an interest. None of the American oil companies have. The Pemex, which is the petroleum company of Mexico, has expressed an interest. Petrocan of Canada has expressed an interest. And a small company in Norway is coming over to see one of the demonstrations. But none of the, you know, Shell hasn't shown any interest. Chevron hasn't shown any interest. Exxon Mobil hasn't shown any interest. I mean, we're not surprised, okay, but hopefully the second tier oil companies will capitalize on this, and this is their chance to gain ground.
Yeah.
I'm sure if one gas station down the street is selling gas at $3 a gallon and somebody else is selling it for 95 cents, we know where the business is going.
Yeah.
So someone has to take the initiative and make the move. And hopefully the deep pockets won't get to Washington fast enough to stop it.
Well, I'd like to keep the deep pockets out of Washington altogether. I think we got a caller that wants to ask you a question. Hi, you got a question for our guest?
Hi, Guy.
You got a question for our guest?
No, sir.
Oh.
You want me to call back tomorrow?
Okay.
Eric, sorry.
Hi, Eric.
Are you busy? I can call back.
We've got our guest on the line right now.
I'll call back.
All righty. Sorry about that. Thought we had a question.
You know, I mentioned in the article, Gary, that this is not the first time we've seen this. There was a company in 1992 called EarthGuard. They were based in Austin, Texas, and it was a company that tried to do what Brazil has already done. Today we see Brazil is totally energy independent from petroleum. They have biofuels, which are made from sugarcane. Just featured recently, I believe, on 2020 or Dateline, I forget. And in 1992, this company, EarthGuard, had the chance to basically wean America off foreign oil. And we were invited. I actually represented a group of investors, and we went to a demonstration in Austin. The inventor, Charles Cantrell, had a F1 Formula car on a racetrack, and he fueled it with this biofuel, 100% biofuel made from sugar beets. And we watched this race car run laps around the track, posting some pretty impressive speeds. And when it came off the track, they plugged it into the emissions analyzer computer, and it had about 40% of the emissions of a conventional gasoline engine. And then they put it on the dynamometer, and it actually had more horsepower. I think it was like 3% more horsepower than the standard when you had Standard Fuel in there. So we were all excited because this was following the 70s when gas was being rationed. You had to go on odd or even days. And so we just thought this was a solution that everyone would embrace and would put an end to gas, you know, soaring gas prices forever. Well, there was a bidding war going on for the rights to this fuel. Our group dropped out because the prices got well up into $40-50 million a month type fees. And so our group dropped out. And we expected to see this stuff at the pump within a month or two. And we never did. I'm sorry, within a year. We never did. And we called Charles Cantrell. And we found out the number was disconnected and he had moved out of the country. We then tracked him down through his former attorney, and we were told that the rights to EarthGuard were purchased by an undisclosed buyer, and what they did with them was their business.
Oh, my.
Approximately 4 months ago, that lawyer was golfing with, it's a small world, was golfing with another lawyer who mentioned to him that the Saudis had purchased the rights to EarthGuard. And probably locked it away in a closet.
How convenient.
Yeah, but it's patented. You could find it in the patent office.
Oh.
And it worked flawlessly.
Well, for all the people who, you know, and you've heard this as much as I have, hey, this is the greatest nation on earth, and we've got all this technology, surely that we can come up with alternative fuels and so forth. Well, we can. Or different methods of extracting what we have. But It's not where the big money is right now, so they're not going to do it until someday, and until they have to, I guess, is the way to put it.
Well, you know what? I think the oil companies are very short-sighted because so long as they play these games with the inflated oil prices, it's forcing alternate energies technology to be developed. And sooner or later, we're going to be driving fuel cell cars or, you know, hydrogen or propane. And these oil companies are going to have to eat all that oil and drink it.
Yeah.
Because no one's going to be willing to pay $3 a gallon. And once the technology goes past the point of no return, no one's going to want to go back to gasoline-powered engines.
Well, it would sure serve them right, wouldn't it?
Did you see that automobile? I was watching the Discovery show probably 3 months ago, and I saw an automobile in France that was running off of compressed water. And I could not believe what I was watching. And as I believe it was on that planet.
Oh, yeah, I know which one you mean. A modern-day Stanley steamer, eh?
Well, it wasn't steam.
Compressed
water. It
wasn't
steam. And this car would go 60 miles a day on one charge. And it was good, you know, good enough for commuting. The downside, it didn't go more than 50 miles an hour.
Well, we can get around that.
No, but I'm saying that there are all sorts of technology out there, and I believe that they're being suppressed for the profits of those who pay the largest campaign contributions.
Sure, sure. Well, that's life in America these days. Bruce, I want to thank you so much for being on the program. You've enlightened our folks quite a bit, and I want to stay in touch. There's a lot more about this I'd like to know.
You should tell everyone to Get a copy of that package I sent you.
Yes, we'll put that up and make sure that people do get this. I really found it fascinating, and I think everybody will. So thanks so much for being on the program. We're just about down out of time here today. I do want to thank you for all the great information, and we will be in touch.
Stay well, Gary.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Well, I got a new name. He got a new name. I messed up his last name. He got my first name wrong. Ah, yes. The joys of live radio. Interesting. Very interesting. It'd be fascinating to watch this and see where this Hobson Oil Company gets any place. Hobson Secondary Oil of New Jersey. Mark that name down.